There comes that right moment. I don't know if that right moment is going to be for you in this lifetime. But until that right moment happens, and it is not a matter of time as to how that right moment is going to occur. It isn't on the clock. It's within you. When you have, so to speak, caved, realized inside yourself that the place that you live is tenuous at best, impermanent. What you were when you were younger is not what is true now. And when you begin to see that it was all about ignoring death and the bigger picture of our life, you will understand when the right moment has happened. A Zen scholar is worthless. Someone who knows the scriptures and the beliefs. People think they can learn what Zen is, learn what life is, learn what the Tao is, learn what Buddhism is, learn what Christianity is. And it is possible to learn, but it is not possible to become absorbed by the very teachings that go beyond words and thoughts. A scholar came to a Zen master. You've heard this story. I've come from very far away to learn something from you. The master just laughed and said, "You have come to the wrong place. Go to some university. Go to find some scholar, some great pundit. There you will be able to learn. If you come to me, then you will have to be aware that learning is not possible here. We only teach unlearning. I can teach you how to unlearn, how to throw words away, to create space within you. And that space is divine. That space is the highest good." Yes, this is how it begins. I mean, honestly, how interested are you in the higher good? In the nature of goodness itself? Rather than thinking what is good, to discover goodness within you. That can only come from the heart, not from the head. And I'm not talking about the emotional heart. I'm talking about the authentic heart. Most people do not strive for that. Hence, they never have the right moment. You're listening to these discourses. And many things are going through your mind as you listen to my words. Most of what I give you is words, words, words. That's what you're thinking, because the moment isn't right yet for you, and you haven't made that moment happen that is right for the listening, right for the hearing, right for the understanding. You have to be completely, so to speak, demolished on the inside, convinced that your body has fooled you, that you have only lived to accompany your body into death. You have not really realized what this life is all about. There is a story, I want to give it to you, about a Brahmin. And if you understand the story beyond the words, you will get the spirit of what I'm trying to teach you. Because behind everything I teach you, there is the spirit of love. You may find my words harsh and cruel or stupid or foolish or unable to bring about any real understanding in you, but nonetheless, they're there. I have planted many a seed in all of you. These seeds are of goodness, not good, goodness. Anyway, if you understand this story of the Brahmin, you will understand what I mean. There was a rich Brahmin, well advanced in years, who was unmindful of the impermanence of earthly things and anticipating a long life. He had a large house built. This house was so big and so gaudy that even the Buddha had heard about it miles and miles away. The Buddha wondered why a man so near death would have a mansion built with so many rooms. So he sent Ananda to the Brahmin to find out what was going on. He told Ananda to teach the Brahmin the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path. The Brahmin showed Ananda his house and explained to him the purpose of the numerous rooms in the house. But to the instruction of the Buddha's teaching, he gave no heed. He did not care. He only cared to show off what he had built. Ananda said, "It is the habit of fools to say, 'I have children, I have wealth,' as though this were an accomplishment in this world. And it may be in the world a seeming accomplishment, but not as life, not in the sense of life itself, the deep presence of life. He who says so is not even his own master," said Ananda. "For when he is bragging about what he possesses, the children, the riches, the servants, he has no idea the anxieties of the world and how they conquer him slowly and persistently." Ananda said, "They know nothing of the changes that will occur in the future." Scarcely had Ananda left when the old man was stricken and passed on. Word traveled to the Buddha, and the Buddha said, "For instruction of those who are ready, only ready to learn, they miss. They do not understand the spirit of the teachings, the spirit of the way," said the Buddha to Ananda. "A fool, though he live in the company of the wise, understands nothing of the true teachings. As a spoon tastes not the flavor of the soup. He thinks of himself only and what he has accomplished in order to avoid the greater teachings," said the Buddha. "The unmindful live in the world of right and wrong, good and bad," said the Buddha. "In the advice of counselors who tell them how to gain more and avoid less. This person is unable to deliver themselves to the moment." What is that moment? It is the moment where we realize. We come to understand the anxieties that we have put ourselves through in order to avoid discomfort. The discomfort of illness, the discomfort that we fight our way through in order to have self-preservation. We miss the whole life. Yes, Buddha is right. A fool, though he lives in the company of wise people, understands nothing of the truth of the moment of life, as the spoon tastes not the flavor of the soup. You sit there listening to me, agreeing and disagreeing with me, trying to inculcate this teaching that I am offering to you of the manner of the way of the great goodness that lives within you. But these are only words. You have learned so many things that you have to now unlearn. Most of the people that I serve have no inclination to understand anything I'm teaching. They think it's just a Gregory thing. They do not hear. They do not recognize what the future brings them as your body does change. And along with that body as it changes, we fall deeper and deeper into the dread of our genetic nature. And nothing ever really changes. So where are you with you? This is how I start every counseling session. Where are you with the you have made of yourself? This you that you have worked so diligently to make, to have people like you, love you, care about you. Think of all the things you've done to try to garner affection rather than love. Many people feel probably very affectionate about you. But that is not to say that they love you. There comes a moment in a person's life. These are brief moments I have found in my students, my attendees, who come to realize they've done it all wrong. I was working with a student the other day. And the student said, give me the truth, give me the facts, tell me what I'm doing wrong. Because they want a change in their life. They want something to be altered in their living. And they do not realize I am pointing towards their life, not their living. So I was very blunt. I said, do you want me to be blunt? Do you want me to be straightforward? Oh, yes, yes, go on ahead. And when I was, and it was only to help them, I pointed out there was no love in their heart for anything they did. It was only the hope of affection, the hope of admiration, the hope of self-preservation. That's all. There was no real love. So we have to ask ourselves, have I ever done anything? Am I even interested in love itself? Well, the person was, to say the least, heartbroken. I am troubled, said the person. And I said, Jesus told us, when you find, you will be troubled. Did you just ignore all of this? Yes. Years and years with me, trying to help them. And God knows I do try to help you. But even when we're close to death, all we're thinking about is our living, not our life, our living. So let me help you make that moment. What have you done to your life? Not what did you get through your living, but what have you done with your life? It was all business, raising a family, making money, having people respect you or affect you in a way that offered you affection and reassurance that what you were doing was important. And yet all the time within yourself, you knew deep inside This is not the way. We are more interested in what people think of us than what we know about ourselves. We are more interested in what we have that will comfort the many, many, many sins of our life. Things we have done and said that were unnecessary. We miss the whole thing, all of us. There has to come a time when you're ready to go beyond learning, when the direct experience is more important to you than whatever your ego can purport. You have a very, very difficult road ahead. It isn't that life is doing this to you. It's, in my case, the Gregory doing this. I do not allow him to offer me opinions. I just am passive about them. As I used to say when I was teaching formerly, if you were as passive towards your thoughts as you are what I'm trying to teach you, you'd be awakened by now. But that is not happening. You know it's not. I know it's not. You have to decide. You have to decide for that moment. When I was in India, I was struggling, just like you, trying to put together what I was hearing with what I could think. And it didn't work. I went through all sorts of anxieties. Was this going to be the way of my life? Was this going to define the rest of my life? The teachings of the way, the teachings of the Tao, cannot be understood by Gregory Edward Penn. His mind is too small. He has many anxieties about it. I didn't want to turn out like my colleagues, just a bunch of words, trying to gain the affection of people so they will offer him or her a living. No, no, no. I had to serve the higher purposes or my life would be worthless. And people don't want those higher purposes dealt with. They don't want them. They want affection. They want reassurance. I made a decision. I drew a line in the sand. This was not about my students or the people I would be teaching. This was about being authentic and having some sense of integrity about my work. It is important for you and me to understand how important our life is. The Tao number 8 is all about that. It is about no longer being the one who lives as the habit of a fool, who is only doing things to gain the affections of others to compensate for the low self-esteem that I generate through my genetic nature. I can't do your work for you. You must come alive. You must begin to see the life that lives within you. You have a living, and then you have your life. And each day, in each moment, you choose which one you're going to live in. Your life or your living. Only you can decide. No one else can do this for you. Whether or not these discourses mean a hill of beans to you is up to you. You have to have that moment when you realize where you are, as you are, how much has been lost, that the fool, as Buddha said, can live in the company of the wise and understand nothing of the true nature of this life, as a spoon tastes not the flavor of the soup. I am honored to offer you these discourses, these retreats, the workshops, everything I do for you. I do. But you have to stop being the one who is the fool. You can't learn this stuff. You have to awaken to it and be realized in it. Let's meditate together. From the Tao, if you seek to embrace the way through the path of learning, the way cannot be understood. If you observe the way with simplicity of heart, great indeed